There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We will have Leicester Everton team news for you in just a few moments' time, courtesy of our friends at Talk Sport. In the meantime, though, just to bring you up to date with what's happening around the grounds. Let's get over to La Liga first and foremost. We had a full-time whistle down there. Eventful game.
It was a very eventful game. Like we said before, it was plagued with controversy, and VAR was back into play. We had two decisions with VAR, one for a penalty and then one for a goal that was given. It looked like there was... the first player might have been offside, then the second player might have been offside, but then after much watching on the televisions, VAR gave the goal, finished 3-2 in the end, but a fantastic game of football.
Purgatory as well for our friend Sean O'Shea. We're forcing him to watch Leeds at the moment. He's a proud Huddersfield man through and through. But the good news is, well, for you, Sean,
yes,
and Brentford fans, what's happening?
The great news for me and all of Brentford and anyone associated with Brentford is that they are winning 1-0 from a penalty in the 62nd minute, I think it was, which is great. Brentford actually have been playing well this season. They've hit a bit of run of form. They were sixth starting today and keep themselves in the playoffs. Hoping for a Borough win later and knock Leeds off the perch. That'd be great.
Leeds against Brentford, two teams with Premier League ambitions and looking to be promoted next season. That's where we can turn our attention now to the Premier League, because we've got Leicester Everton for you live from 6 o'clock, and the man that will be calling that one for you is the one, the only, Adam Bridge from TalkSport joins us live on the line now. Adam, thanks so much indeed for your time this afternoon. I've searched for a Leicester or an Everton panellist to join us on the grill this afternoon. Can't find any. So I'll start with the West Ham question, if I may. From one West Ham fan to another, last night, obviously no early game in the Premier League today because we have one of these weird Friday night games where we have to stay up very, very late on a Friday to watch here in the UAE. No one ever wants to lose, but if you're going to lose, lose stylishly. That seems to be the message coming from a lot of West Ham fans. They're not completely at odds with this particular result last night against Brighton because of the fact that West Ham looked good last night. Is that an opinion that you share?
Yeah, I think that's probably fairly fair to say that, actually. I think Brighton are a very stubborn side. They're very difficult to break down. They played with that two banks of four and then Solly March tucking in as well. And it was just one of those games where we seemed to find it quite difficult to kind of have that cutting edge. Having said that, you know, Arnautovic with a wonderful opportunity in stoppage time at the end of the game, and Balbuena with that header during the second half that you feel should probably have been put away. And when you consider the amount of opportunities clear-cut that Brighton actually made, I thought it was a pretty good performance, really. I think reading some of the press reports today and listening to some of the radio reporters over here in England talking about last night's game, you'd have thought we were completely outplayed. But I know midway point in the first half, they'd only had two touches inside our penalty area and had scored from one of them. And I think it was a poor performance from Masuaku defensively. Zabaleta again went wandering. But all in all, in an attacking sense, I thought we were quite impressive.
So that was West Ham going down to Brighton last night. That's the West Ham question out of the way. I'm going to hand over to the Man United fan now.
Yeah, Adam, just before we get on to that blockbuster Premier League match, Leicester City and Everton, the million-dollar question here on everyone's lips, is Jose Mourinho heading down to the Manchester Job Search Centre on Monday morning looking for a job?
I think it very much depends on what happens this afternoon, really, because I know the reports that come out in one of the tabloid newspapers late last night and have been obviously on everyone's lips today as people have been digesting their breakfast and reading their newspapers, is that come what may, he was going to be sacked today. That's something which has been completely refuted by Manchester United, but they do have history when it comes to this kind of thing. Obviously, we found out that Fergie was retiring before it was made public. We found out about Moyes and Van Gaal again before it was made public. On those occasions, the club didn't shout the story down. This time around, they have shouted the story down, which probably raises a few more questions around it. But the journalist involved is fairly well connected and has been on the Manchester patch for a long time. And he wouldn't put this story out if there wasn't any smoke without fire. Is it Mourinho's fault? Well, that's a whole different debate, really, isn't it? I think you're looking at a manager who has built a career on success based on very physical sides and a practical element of football and playing in a certain system, who's gone to a club that's not used to really having a system and thinking about things practically. It's used to winning and winning in style. And I think the two things probably don't really marry up. And that's the issue. And that's where we have loggerheads. And also some of the points made by the former Manchester United player, of course, Gary Neville, last night. You know, you've got a football club where there are no football people in the hierarchy. We know, obviously, Sir Alex, who was working as an advisor before, has been off with his illness. We know Sir Bobby's there, but we also know for a fact that it was Sir Bobby and Sir Alex had no say on who was signed in the summer. That, you know, you've got money people making decisions about whether Mourinho needs a centre-half or he needs a right-back or what he does need. And that's not a good state for a football club of Manchester United size to actually be in. You have an unbalanced squad, and I think if they give him the time to turn it around, I'm not sure he's going to be able to, because I don't think he's quite got the players that he needs to play the system that he wants.
Let's turn our attention now to matters in hand. Of course, you can hear Manchester United against Newcastle live here on Dubai. I courtesy of you and your colleagues over at Talk Sport a little later on, 8.30 local time here in the UAE. But 8.30 UAE. Before that, from 6 o'clock, Leicester-Everton. Leicester, 12 points from 7 games. Last time they did that was 2015-2016. Surely not. It's not on the cards again, is it?
I don't think it is. No, I think there's way too much quality. I don't think the big boys are going to get caught out quite like that again. I mean, there's been a bit of discord. If you went back 3 or 4 games, there was certain individuals who were saying that Claude Puel's time was probably coming to an end at Leicester, and a few people suggesting he may well have been facing a trip down to the local job centre in Leicester. But not the case, really. The form's been much better of late. They've secured some really decent victories. They're having one of those seasons. They've not drawn for 16 games in the Premier League, so it's very much a feast or famine with them. They either win spectacularly or they tend to lose spectacularly. So I think you can expect more of that today. I think what's happened is Puel has kind of settled the side. Some of the players that didn't get opportunities last year, the likes of Amati, of course, Mendy, didn't really get an opportunity to impress. And they've come into the side, and in a replacement for Mahrez, in Maddison, they've found the perfect foil for Jamie Vardy, because those two are combining brilliantly so far this season.
Adam, two clubs with aspirations, I guess, being realistic, of making the top seven in the Premier League. Come the end of the season, who do you think will be higher on the table, Leicester or Everton?
I think it'll be Leicester, actually, because I think Claude Puel knows what to do. He did a good job with them last year, obviously getting them up to eighth in the table when he came into the club. I think Marco Silva obviously got Everton off to a great start with them being unbeaten in their first 4 games. They've picked up a little with that victory, obviously, against Fulham last weekend. But I'm just not convinced about him. He came in as the great hope, of course, for Hull, but failed to keep them up. And then he had a terrific start at Watford before running out of steam and actually lost his job after a defeat here against Leicester last season. So is he the man who can deliver for Everton on a long-term basis? They've certainly invested well in the squad. Not sure it's quite balanced, and I think they still need another centre-forward. But I got a funny feeling that Leicester could well be the real deal. Not as good as, of course, 2015-2016, but certainly good enough for a top-8 finish this season.
Hopefully you've got a bit of team news for us. Any big changes for Messrs Silva and Puel?
Well, in terms of Puel, no, it's unchanged, actually, which is probably no great surprise. He seems to be fairly settled with what he's got at this moment in time in terms of a starting 11. So Maddison obviously will play that fairly floating role behind Vardy and Iheanacho, who will lead the line in a fairly solid central midfield scenario. And Chilwell continues to be favoured over Fuchs in terms of the left-back position, and Morgan and Maguire are back together at the heart of that defence. As for Everton, we're seeing Bernard gets his first Premier League start today, and Richarlison obviously will lead the line. So it's Richarlison up top, and the three look like they're playing in behind him will be Walcott, Gylfi Sigurdsson and Bernard as well. Leighton Baines still contending for a place on the bench with Dinier still continuing as a left-back. I mean, that big issue is keeping clean sheets. They've not done it very well. They did it last week against Fulham, and this back line of Zouma, Keane, Kenny and Dinier doesn't look the most solid one for me, and I think there'll be opportunities today there for Leicester.
Quick final word before we let you go and get ready for that game. For another of the teams that's in action from 6 o'clock local time here in the UAE, Crystal Palace are taking on Wolves. Consistency, loyalty, not exactly words that sort of roll off the tongue when you're talking Premier League in 2018, but Wolves have broken a Premier League record this afternoon. They name an unchanged side for the 8th game in a row. First side to do that at the start of a season. Kudos to Wolves for doing exactly that. Better consistency.
Well, they've only lost one game. I mean, he wouldn't need to change anything, really, does he? They are playing with real confidence. They are playing with style. Last week, I think they huffed and puffed a little for the first 45 minutes against Southampton before in the second half, certainly turning in a performance to be proud of. And that's what we've seen from them. We saw it at Old Trafford. We saw that last gasp win at West Ham. He has a way to play. He has a style to play. He's got the players that he wants that play brilliantly in those positions. You know, the club itself was rewarded with nominations for Player of the Month, Nuno up for Manager of the Month as well. They've acquitted to life in the Premier League. And I think I said a couple of weeks ago when we previewed the Manchester United Wolves game that they are probably the best side to ever be promoted from the Championship.
Wouldn't disagree with that. Bridgie, thanks so much indeed. Enjoy the game a little later on. We didn't get a prediction from you. Leicester against Everton, which way is it going?
It's going Leicester's way today for me, 2-1.
Looking forward to it. Enjoy that one. We will be listening in with interest here from the UAE. I'll let you get on and I'll hand over to our Huddersfield fan, Sean O'Shea, to talk us through that Leeds goal. Thanks very much indeed, Bridgie.
Oh, it pains me to say, but Leeds have equalised in the 88th minute of this game. Pontus Janssen, great delivery to be fair, it was a great free kick and a header from the back post across the goal to get the equaliser there. So maybe I have to settle for the pleasure of Leeds only getting 1 point instead of three, because there's only 2 minutes left of this game now.
2 minutes of regular time, keep an eye on that one. We'll take a short break when we come back. Rugby.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Kamali Clinic, in collaboration with the Tavistock and Portman NHS Foundation Trust, present two training courses for health and education practitioners this October. The first covers mental health difficulties in children, young people and families, and includes what to worry about, how to help and how to develop resilience. The second course is Leadership in Complex Organisations, showcasing best practice for effective leaders. Both three-day courses run in October. Register at kamaliclinic.com. That's kamaliclinic.com.
This week
on Off Script.
In the news,
the WWE superstar Rey Mysterio.
I do get asked if I always wore the mask, if I never took off the mask. And there does come a time where the mask comes off and Rey Mysterio becomes the family man. But then come nighttime, it's showtime.
Entertainment.
You and I are like a scrawny, malnourished version of Tugboat and Earthquake.
Earthquake and Tugboat, they were a partnership.
They were a tag team in WWF as it was. I was thinking us more as the Bushwhackers or the Legion of Doom.
And sports.
Kumar Sangakkara on the UAE T20X.
Cricket is the fast evolving game, and leagues like the UAE T20X is going to be where a lot of these young cricketers will cut their teeth when it comes to actually understanding what we say and how to put it into practice.
Join the conversation on Off Script every weekday, live at 5.
In association with FIFA Club World Cup, UAE 2018, and The Hyde, Jumeirah Al Qasr.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's excitement in the air and on the ground for Emirates Skywards members. Because now you can earn Skywards miles based on the amount spent on your car rental with Hertz. That means the higher your spend, the more miles you earn with Hertz in the UAE and around the world. The higher your Emirates Skywards membership tier, the more miles you'll earn on your rental. Make every ride count with Hertz and Emirates Skywards. Find out more at hertz.com/Emirates Skywards. Terms and conditions apply.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Game on indeed, yes, and we will of course keep you up in the picture of what's happening in all the live sport at the moment throughout proceedings this afternoon. Are you listening to The Grill? We're live from Barasti where the game is always on. Let's just put you in the picture of what's happening in the cricket. I'll try and get you an update from the Abu Dhabi T20 in just a few minutes time, see how the Auckland Aces are getting on down there in their game against the Titans, but I can tell you the Titans fellow countrymen are doing not too badly at all against Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe are batting first. They're 117 for 3 from the loss of 26 wickets. Masakadza, Meyer and Irvine are the three to go. But good reply, good settling of the ship by Taylor and Williams. They're both 40 not out respectively. 117 for the loss of 3 wickets from 26.1. Right, let's go to the world of rugby, shall we? Because we have a huge weekend of rugby to look forward. Is this the final weekend of the Rugby Championship?
This is indeed the final round of the Rugby Championship, Tom. Yeah, it all gets underway. Two matches. Let's not forget there's two matches. The late kickoff is down in Argentina with the Pumas, who had a pretty good Rugby Championship. They will face the Wallabies. Michael Checker, it seems that he's under as much pressure as Jose Mourinho these days. Let's wait and see what happens in that match. But a massive match for the Wallabies. They've been very disappointing results-wise in the last few months. That's a massive kickoff down there in Argentina. And then, for me, the biggest rugby match so far in 2018 is happening at Loftus-Versfeld in Pretoria. It's the Springboks taking on the All Blacks. It's a mouth-watering clash. Of course, the All Blacks, they've secured their third consecutive rugby championship when they did defeat Pumas last weekend in that match. But they do have a score to settle with the Springboks. They lost in Wellington 36 points to 34, a massive upset victory there for the Springboks. Well-deserved. And this is going to be a thrilling contest. No love lost between these two teams. A very, very strong rivalry between historical pretense between the Springboks and the All Blacks. But interesting to see the stats here. It's going to be at altitude, and the South Africans have a very strong record at Loftus-Versfeld, this ground. They have a 77% win record at this ground, though. But it's a pretty happy hunting ground for the All Blacks as well, Tom, because they've played five matches and won four at Loftus, so they do have a good record there. But really, really fascinating to see how this match comes together. I can tell you, in 1 year's time, Tom, these two teams will play each other in almost 1 year to today in the first round in the group stages of the next Rugby World Cup. So they're not going to play each other too many times before that, maybe one match in next year's Rugby Championship. So it's a massive clash here. Can the Springboks win two consecutive matches against the All Blacks? Well, we'll have to wait and see. 7 o'clock the action is. South Africans have made a few changes. Let's just listen to their team lineup for this match against the All Blacks.
He was very disappointed, not just with the All Blacks. I think his own performance was quite low by the standards of Kieran Reid. Reid is now one of the great...
I think for 2 years now, Kitsoff has probably been the best loose head prop in South Africa. Now I think they've recognised it. This is probably the biggest selection they're going to make all calendar year in 2018. And the fact that Kitsoff is starting, I think that tells you something. And there's no messing around this game. This New Zealand scrum is as good as international scrum as I have seen in 15, 20 years. And Vincent Koch as well, coming from Saracens to be on the bench. That's really interesting, because it's not just how you start your game against New Zealand, it's how you finish. You watch that Argentina game and they decimated the Pumas pack, and the last 20 minutes it just became utter chaos. Vincent Koch could come on at the 50, 55 minute mark and try and add some stability, because if the Springboks aren't stable in the scrum, then Faf de Klerk, terrier that he is, and Andre Pollard will have no chance on the back foot.
Yeah, that's the changes that Rassie Erasmus has made for the Springboks this afternoon. Damien Dalien comes back into the centres. Francois Lowe will start at number 8. Stephen Kitsoff will start at prop. Willie Ruru will play his 50th test match, a fine achievement for the flying fullback there. Steve Hansen, he's made a couple of big changes for the All Blacks as well. Kieran Reid is back to captain the team. They were given a week off and didn't have to travel to Argentina last week, recovering from that long-term back injury. The 102 test-capped prop, Owen Franks, he will start anchoring the scrum. Aaron Smith comes back to halfback, and Jack Goodhue will partner Sonny Bill Williams in the centres. Here's just have a listen to our friends there at Sky Sports talking about the changes to the All Blacks.
He was very disappointed, not just with the All Blacks. I think his own performance was quite low by the standards of Kieran Reid. Reid is now one of the great All Blacks, and it's not about having won the Rugby Championship. It's now about beating South Africa and just reminding the world who the number one is. I know in the press conference back in Joburg, when we were chatting with Steve Hansen, he was saying it's not about the psychology, but deep down within that management, they will be thinking, we want to put a statement how to put the Springboks back in their box, not have them leaving this match in Pretoria thinking we're close to the All Blacks. I would probably argue he's the world's best scrum half, but in Wellington, Faf de Klerk got under his skin, as he did with England back here in June. He's that sort of scrum half. Smith was agitated. He lost his poise. And it was understandable why TJ Perenara got the start against Argentina. And Perenara is a really good player. And if Aaron Smith allows de Klerk to get to him again, then he's going to be off the field pretty early. So it's a big game. You've got Reid back
from Argentina, and you've got Aaron Smith back after an early call off onto the bench against South Africa. So big things expected, 8 and 9. It's a key battleground. Press conference, Sonny Bill was the sort of master of ceremonies. He had his young apprentice there, but Goodhue, don't be misled by it. He's pretty shy in a press conference, but he picks some fantastic lines in the game. And again, I love the combination of Sonny Bill's ability to lure defenders and Goodhue's ability to see where the space is. He picks it brilliantly. You know, he might just in time be the next Comrade Smith.
Arch, you and I have done this show for a long, long time. I've known you for many a year as well. I feel that I sort of know you well enough now to know when you're excited about a game. And I suppose that's indicative of this particular fixture. It's not about winning the championship. That's done and dusted. You know, we had the celebrations last week. It's about the pride in the New Zealand badge that needs to get back after a couple of below-par performances.
Yeah, I mean, I'll boil it down and be brutally honest. The All Blacks versus the Springboks is the greatest rugby rivalry for New Zealanders. Nice. It is our traditional foe. It's the historical reconnaissance of what's happened between those two teams. New Zealand versus South Africa is, for us, as New Zealanders, our biggest rugby rivalry. And since the post-apartheid era, when we came out of that sort of era in the early 90s, South Africa had a winning record against the All Blacks for many years. And the All Blacks now have sort of wrested that ascendancy back. But this is a massive match. Winning at altitude at Loftus-Versfeld is extremely difficult for any team. And the All Blacks don't like losing multiple matches. At the start of the year, I thought this was I penciled in this was a match the All Blacks, I think they could lose. But having lost at home in Wellington to the Springboks, it's almost like feeling like it's a must-win for the All Blacks to really get momentum back. They've got to go to the Northern Hemisphere and play a couple of massive matches against Ireland and Dublin. They've got to go to Twickenham and take on England. I thought they might lose one of those two matches as well. So we're 1 year away from a Rugby World Cup. Plenty of sort of points to score. Players are still playing for positions. They're still looking to get in those starting lineups for both the Springboks and for the All Blacks. And it's a massive match for both teams. And it'll be absolutely fascinating. There's a lot of respect between both nations and both teams for this match, and none more so. We've got interesting to listen to the comments of Dan Carter, the great All Black fly half, one of the greatest players of all time, talk about how important it is for the All Blacks to really get a win against the Springboks today, this afternoon in South Africa.
There's one thing as an All Black you don't do, and that's lose on home soil. So credit to South Africa, they played extremely well that game. And even though the All Blacks have wrapped up the Rugby Championship, there's going to be no love lost in this, you know, this match. I can't wait to watch it. You know, the All Blacks have got a bit of a point to prove after being beaten by South Africa at home in Wellington. So, you know, to then travel to South Africa and finish the Rugby Championship on a high, even though they've won the Rugby Championship, it just won't be the same unless they win, you know, this Test match. So they'll be preparing extremely well this week to make sure that they can put in a good performance.
And Tom, that's one man the All Blacks could have done with in Wellington for his fine goal kicking, that of Dan Carter. We had Bowden Barrett had an off day with the boot, albeit he bounced back and kicked all his conversions and penalties last week down in Argentina. Dan Carter, almost, if he hadn't kicked the points with the boot, he might have tried a drop goal in the last 3 or 4 minutes to try and seal the victory there, which the All Blacks didn't seem to want to do. But also welcoming back to the All Blacks is the captain, Kieran Reid. He was rested from the trip to Argentina. He's had a back injury. They didn't want him sitting on the plane all the way to Argentina, then all the way to South Africa. But he is back. He will captain the team from number 8. This is his thoughts yesterday for the captain's run for this massive match for the All Blacks versus South Africa.
Beck's feeling really good. Probably, yeah, great foresight from the coaches. And, you know, for me, I think being back in the squad, it's been pretty invigorating. The guys had a good week in RG, and everyone's in a good frame of mind, so I can't wait for this week. You know, the mind still obviously wanders back to your last performance, so we can't just turn up and expect things to go our way all the time. So we've got to have plans in place to rectify those things, make sure that, I guess, as a captain, we try and manage the game as best we can. So that's probably one of our greatest learnings. We've acclimatised this week, and when you get out there on the field, it, essentially you just, you know, have to push yourself through it, and it's just harder to get the air in your lungs. It's the nature of altitude. So it doesn't necessarily mean you can't perform at your level. I think it just makes it more mentally challenging because you are put under a bit more probably mental fatigue. I think both teams have shown a willingness to really to attack, and especially it's been, you know, a few years since we've played here at altitude against them, but It always seems to be a pretty ding-dong battle, so I'm sure we'll have to go close to or near that 80 minutes or over it if we need to. And, our guys are excited by that challenge, so can't wait to hopefully be a great spectacle. I know everyone here in South Africa this week has been building up the game and got a lot of support from the fans and a lot of who are supporting the South Africans, so it's building nicely.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Right, talking of that game, our feature game is going to be Leicester against Everton. Adam Bridge was kind enough to join us a little earlier on to give us a heads up about what to expect. He's calling the game live over there at Leicester. It will be live here on Dubai I-103.8 from 6 p.m. soon as we go off air, so in a matter of just under half an hour. Time now to hear from the let's start with the Leicester manager, if we can, Puel, who's been talking about his opposition, saying Everton have invested heavily over recent years.
I think the change, they evaluate about their squad, about the management with a new manager also. I think they have good abilities to play with a good player with quality on the floor. They have good attributes, good different player with fantastic attributes. We know their ambition. We saw this in the transfer window this summer.
His opponent Marco Silva says Leicester, as always, will be tough opponents.
Tough game for sure. It's always tough to play there. Good side, good players. Fast players in the attack line as well. He's a strong team. They solve many games in the set pieces as well, offensive set pieces. A good example, the last game, they won the game with the two corners. They won one penalty in one and the other they scored in the second. They are strong in that moment. We already analyzed them. We know where they are strong, but you know some things we can win some advantage as well. We prepare well the game. We'll be tough, but we'll go there to play to win the match.
Listen, that's your feature game from 6 o'clock, but you will hear all the goals as they fly in from the other games. Five other games kicking off at 6 o'clock, including Burnley against Huddersfield. Sean Dyche makes one change to the Burnley side that won 2-1 at Cardiff City last time out. Ashley Barnes preferred over Matej Vidra. James Tarkowski also starts and recovered from that groin strain that saw the England man withdrawn during the early stages of the win in the Welsh capital. Stephen Defoe misses the game due to a personal issue, while winger Robbie Brady is not yet fit to return. Which way does David Varga shape them up? Let's find out from our man, Sean O'Shea.
Yeah, just looking at the starting line, just one forced change for us today. Congolo's injured, so Van La Parra's coming to replace him. So I'm sure we'll set up as we do, 4-2-3-1. Very predictable this season so far. We'll have colossal Lossell in goals, as I like to call him, because he is colossal, saved us a lot last year. Eric Dermott right back, Zanker and Schindler will be the centre-halves, and Christian Löwer will be the left back. I would imagine Hogg and Moy will be the holding midfielders, and then Van La Parra, Billing and Pritchard make up the three, just playing behind De Potra, who starts up top.
Palace against Wolves as well for you. Roy Hodgson makes just one change to the side, left empty-handed by Bournemouth on Monday. Jeffrey Schlupp comes in for the 23-year-old Max Meyer in midfield. So just one change there. No changes for Nuno Espirito Santo. In fact, he set a Premier League record by naming an unchanged 11 for an eighth game on the trot at the start of the season. Only change to report for the visitors that England youth international Morgan Gibbs-White replaces Ruben Vinagre on the bench down here. We're here on the beach at Barasti. I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it? That just shows you, and we heard from Adam, big call from Adam, best team to ever come up into the Premier League from the Championship.
It's a big shout, to be fair, but they were very, very impressive last year, and I think when they came up along with Fulham, I think everybody kind of said they won't struggle in the Premier League, because the kind of brand of football they played last year was great for the Championship, and they run away with the league, but it was also a brand of football that worked very well in the Premier League, and their starting 11 hasn't changed too much since they were in the Championship. So are they the best team to ever come up from the Championship? Definitely in recent history. I can't think of many better that have come through. Apart from Huddersfield Town, of course.
Spurs are in action a little later on as well against Cardiff. Tottenham make three changes from their midweek defeat to Barcelona in the Champions League. Danny Rose returns at left back. Eric Dier comes into central midfield. Moussa Sissoko gets a start. Ben Davies, Victor Wanyama, Eric Lamella are the players to miss out. Surprised by that performance by Tottenham midweek? I mean, it's always a tough opponent when you come up against Barcelona, but He was fairly emphatic.
Well, I mean, for me, the problem for Tottenham this year is the fact that they didn't buy anybody in the summer. Now, I can understand you don't want to go out and buy players just for the sake of buying them, but for a club like Tottenham who, you know, have had Pochettino now for a few years and have got aspirations of pushing for the title or winning trophies, I find it very strange that they didn't buy anybody. And it just kind of shows now, because they're kind of having to play the same 11 every week, and it's always going to be tough against Barcelona, you're right, but they weren't brilliant. I mean, okay, finished 3-2, but I don't think they were impressive, and they need to put in a good performance. The other thing about that game was the pitch at Wembley was terrible on Wednesday night. It was like a Sunday league pitch. Couldn't believe it. I think there was a concert on there at the weekend before, yeah, and it was like dark patches all around, and I just thought, I mean, that's obviously because they thought they were in the new stadium, so I assume Wembley had booked in these things, thinking that Tottenham weren't going to be there, but it wasn't a great setup. It didn't look great for me, and Tottenham, I just think, are going to struggle.
We've got Cardiff, who they are opposition today. Let's see how they fare against them. They're boosted by the return of Junior Hulyett, who missed last week's defeat to Burnley with a virus. Neil Warnock had joked he would play 10 defenders for this game, but he's resisted that urge. Joe Bennett is the only other change at fullback. Is that the way to play Tottenham these days? Just put 10 in front?
It doesn't work, because we've tried that, as Town, David Wagner for Huddersfield this year. We've already played City, we've played Tottenham, played Chelsea, and you can't just go and defend against these teams. You have to have a better game plan than just trying to defend it out for 90 minutes, because eventually it only takes one person to slip up, and it takes a second to slip up, and you get broken through, and you can see goals, and then your game plan is completely out the window. So no, for me, it's not the way to set up. I would have a game plan where I'm going to go at them and try and beat them and expose them where they're weak. But Neil Warnock will do what Neil Warnock does best, and that is try and defend and grind out results.
Watford also playing Bournemouth as well. Havergrassi has made one change for Watford, an enforced change, in fact, for this one. Kiko Femenya comes in to replace the injured Mark Navarro at fullback. Nathaniel Chiloba, who was named in Southgate's latest England squad on Thursday, he's on the bench as well for Watford, whose great start to the season continues, Shona.
Been fantastic, haven't they, Watford? They've been really good to watch. And do you know what? I'm not ashamed to admit that at the start of the season, I actually thought they'd struggle. I really did, because they weren't convincing last year, but they've started really, really well and, you know, deserve to be where they are. And, you know, you don't really see it faltering. They had a great result against Tottenham, and, you know, they're playing good football. They're full of confidence, so long may it continue for Watford. Fair play to him.
No changes for Eddie Howe's Bournemouth as well. He goes in with an unchanged side. They last beat Crystal Palace 2-1 last time out as well. Have you read Bournemouth's form this season?
Yeah, I think they've been good. I like Eddie Howe. I've had the pleasure of working with Bournemouth over the last 3 years, because they've trained with us when they've come over in the winter breaks, and he's a very, very good coach. And from speaking to him, you know, he says that, you know, they're very strategic in the players that they recruit. And he firmly believes that his players would run through brick walls for him. And I'm happy for them. They're doing well. Again, another team that people thought might struggle, as they weren't great last year, but they've got off to a good start and doing well.
Right, I've just got another update for you on this whole Mourinho game. We're going to hear from Jose Mourinho and Rafa Benitez in a few moments' time. But BBC Radio 5 Live have gone to town with this particular story. They've tracked down the journalist in question, the man who has set the bee amongst the hive at the moment. Mirror journalist David McConnell, who broke the initial story of Jose Mourinho's imminent sacking, has gone on the record in the last hour or so, saying, behind the scenes, Jose Mourinho has reached the point of no return. He feels the club haven't backed him, and the board cannot allow this situation of unrest in the dressing room to continue. Sir Alex Ferguson never washed his dirty linen in public, but we've seen it before with Mourinho when it all ended at Chelsea. Mourinho was given a contract extension at Old Trafford this year, and the assumption was that he was going to be backed in the transfer market. He wasn't. Playing Scott McTominay and Ander Herrera at centre-half was a very public message to the board that he hasn't been backed. Zinedine Zidane is a name that's been put in the frame. This club like to have a plan in process, a replacement lined up before they move, so any delay suggests they haven't got their man lined up yet. This follows the article that suggests, come what may, regardless of the result later on this evening, and it's live here in Dubai I-103.8 from 8:30 this evening, regardless of that result, he's a goner.
It'll be really interesting to see how it pans out. I can't see Manchester United sacking Jose Mourinho if they go and beat Newcastle today. Admittedly, it's been a very poor start to the season, and the style of football and Mourinho's demeanour that we've spoke about before has not been great and filled with confidence. But, you know, Manchester United are not known for sacking managers. They were lucky enough to have the best manager of all time for so long. So it's been a very strange process for them over the last few years. But it'll be interesting to see, like I say, what happens at the end. But I can't help but feel he's going to be going at some point, and I don't think he'll be there at the end of the season.
So that news came out rather strategically overnight, which would have been after the press conferences from the managers leading into this. However, as we've known, and all observers of Premier League press conferences, especially those involving a certain Jose Mourinho, they can be touchy affairs. This is Jose in the lead up to the Newcastle game.
I think we have enough potential to do better than what we are doing in the Premier League. We are better than this. And because we are better than this, our situation is going to improve. I have no doubts about that.
You've had such a successful career, Chelsea. Is this the biggest challenge?
Did I?
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Definitely, 100%. Is this the biggest challenge?
No. Every challenge is a challenge, and every challenge is a different challenge. Last season was a fantastic season for us, and if you want something more, in pre-season I also told that this season was going to be very difficult.
Jose Mourinho there giving his thoughts. What about Rafa Benitez? He travels to Old Trafford. Now there's a manager who's having a few problems with his owners and senior management over at Newcastle. There's a manager who's not being given the money and the players that he wants in a transfer window. So what does he make of his situation with Newcastle at the moment, and also that of Manchester United? Does he think that they're in positions that they should be at this time of the year?
In all my time in England, I don't remember any fragile Manchester United team. So all of them there, they have been really strong every year with good managers, good players. I don't see any Manchester United team fragile. I can see a team that everybody was expecting that they could be higher, but it's a question of time. It's like us. We are in a position that we could expect to be watching the futures and say it's very difficult. But also, I'm quite positive. I say I have to be realistic, but at the same time, optimistic. So if you see the teams that they were at the bottom last year, in the ninth feature were Everton, Bournemouth and Crystal Palace. None of them were relegated, so it's a long-running race.
Rafa Benitez there giving his thoughts. Look, there's a man who's known success at the highest level in club football. There's a man who knows his way around the north of England, knows his way around the Premier League as well. I suppose the question is, could you ever consider a former Liverpool manager taking over Manchester United?
I was wondering where you were going with that, and then I twigged where you were going. I don't think so. I don't think Manchester United would look to appoint someone like Rafa Benitez after he's been a Liverpool manager. And I think Rafa Benitez likes or loves Liverpool too much to go and manage Manchester United. I suppose he wouldn't be a bad shout, because obviously, as like you say, he's managed very high level. He's managed Real Madrid as well. But I don't see him even in the race for that, no.
I think, are we not looking at fellas from a different point of view? We've been talked a lot on this show and other shows about this sort of changing of the guard of managers these days. You know, the days of the old manager set in their ways with the traditional ways of, and you'll know better than anyone from your coaching roles as well, that there is a new thinking coming into coaching and the way that you manage players, yeah, and teams as well. And we're seeing those ethics come through the likes of Guardiola, through the likes of Unai Emery, through the likes of Jurgen Klopp to a certain degree. It's a younger approach, a younger, fresher approach.
It is, yeah. Like, you know, football evolves at an incredible pace, and it's not just the sort of themes that run through football tactically. It's social media plays a big part, yeah. Money plays a big part when you're talking about managing players. And I think I think the kind of older generation of managers, if you like, Allardyce and Moyes and these kind of guys, it is about new forward-thinking ways. And you're right, Klopp, Guardiola, Pochettino, and Zidane as well, you have to mention, because they're the new kind of forward-thinking managers who are fresh with everything, you know, like the sports science and the analysis and nutrition and everything that's the wraparound stuff with football. You have to have, you know, you have to have a great understanding of all those elements. And I don't think the older managers have too much of that, and I think it is a younger managers or younger coaches, if you like. And you know, Chris talked about earlier about having a sports director, and I kind of see that's where football's going now. You have your kind of sports director that manages the transfers and manages the kind of players, if you like, and then you have a head coach who is basically there to coach them and deliver the ethos or philosophy, if you like, of the club.
One thing I just want to get your thoughts on before we build up and hand over to our match commentary, Arch, maybe I can get your thoughts on this. a point that was made by Chris McCarthy earlier. I didn't get a chance to pull him up on it, so I'll pull you two up on it.
Excellent.
He said that one of the stumbling blocks for the Zidane thing at the moment is a language barrier, which I sort of found weird because there are managers in the Premier League, there are managers in other leagues around the world that still aren't fluent in the language of the country in which they are managing or training or coaching. Is it a barrier these days?
I don't think it's a huge barrier. When he came in, when he first started doing press conferences, he couldn't really speak any English. Now he's, you'd say he's pretty fluent. He holds himself very well. Same with Pochettino. When he first came to Southampton, had a translator, and everyone kind of had a bit of a joke about it in the post-match interviews. I don't think it's a big issue. I think someone like Zidane, a big character and a very good coach, from what I believe, you know, and obviously what we've seen when he won their back-to-back titles with Champions League three times in a row. I don't think it is a big barrier because you've got to think of all the coaching staff that are at the club. You know, there's loads of different languages between the players anyway. Sorry, not just the staff, but the players.
Yeah.
I don't think it is. I think he would come and learn it, but his assistant manager or, you know, if Carrick's still there, obviously speaks English. I don't think it's a big problem.
Other point is there's more non-English players in the Manchester United squad than English players.
Yeah,
and you could look at, say, for example, the Frenchman and Paul Pogba, albeit he grew up in Manchester. But look at the Spanish players, David De Gea. Juan Mata, Herrera. They probably came to England not speaking great English as well.
But we know that Sanchez doesn't speak English, does he? Still doesn't speak English. Because no.
Aguero's the same. Aguero's English is very, very poor, and he's been in the country like 7 or 8 years, and he's doing all right. So
I don't think language is a massive excuse. They talk football language, and that's what counts. And they'll find ways. Look, these clubs have got money. Each player will have an individual translator or someone to help communicate with them. I'm sure someone on the coaching staff works with different groups of players of nationalities. If there's a language issue, I'm sure they wouldn't overturn that as aspect. And if you want your man, if you want your player, then that's what you go for. So again, for me, this all boils down to results. We're in a results orientated industry, and if Manchester United was winning matches and they still had this discord going on, it's not a factor, it's not an issue, because people don't always get on at their place of work, at where they do business. But the problem is, if you've got a team that's not performing well and there is unhappy dressing rooms and all sorts of rumours and you're not winning matches, that's when the problem is. But it's all about getting results.
I just don't know. I've got a feeling. I constantly sit here and I ask for predictions and I ask for bits and pieces and I ask for, and we think we sort of understand. That's the beauty. That's why we're all so addicted to sport. We love the unpredictability of sport, and I just see it. You know, we sat here last week going, oh, you know, the Americans will come back and they'll win this Ryder Cup. It's going to happen. You know, it's a shoe thing. I just think that we're in for a roller coaster later on today. This story wouldn't have come out if there hadn't been some sort of, and you know, all this thing about the club turning around and say they're completely back. Of course they're going to say that before the game.
Of course, yeah.
They've got potential of 3 points. They're not going to say, yeah, we are going to sack him after the game, are they?
No. It's never going to happen. But you're right. And like you said, it's the timing of everything as well. Like they let the press conference finish yesterday before they kind of released this kind of story about that he's going to get sacked, whether he wins or loses. You're right. It's an interesting one. It will be very, very interesting to see how that pans out now this afternoon. You know, win or lose, is he still going to be there tomorrow? Or is he still going to be there next week? You know, who knows? Like,
well, here's the thing as well. It's one situation where the story's been leaked for whatever reason, or there is a story there somewhere. There is some smoke, but would the man? And if there was a plan to fire him this weekend or sack Mourinho this weekend, maybe that might change now. Maybe they might just sit back on it a little bit and just wait and see, and not want to feed the fuel of that fire. They might want to take stock, take reflection, see what happens. If there's a response from the team, if there's a response from the manager in this match against Newcastle tonight, and then review things. But what do we know? What do we really know?
The other thing that's interesting is Gary Neville said in that, you know, that kind of heated statement that he put out yesterday, that if he said that Jose Mourinho will be the most supported man ever today at, you know, Old Trafford, and if they were to sack him, he said, you know, the fans will turn on the board. And because Neville's such an icon, they'll probably see that and think,
oh,
we need to be careful.
You know what that means. You know what that means. You know where we're going with this, don't you?
Gary Neville for Man United manager.
Yeah, you see what's happening there.
Yeah, well, he got a good CV at Valencia, didn't he? So why not? He's
him and Giggs.
The Neville brothers.
Just give it the class of
92. Gary Enfield.
Just give the fans what they want and give it the class of 92 and let all 5-6.
And tell you what, Scholesi's been pretty damning in his criticism as well. So maybe get Scholesi in there as well.
Yeah.
Right, let's go very quickly because we are just moments away from heading over to Leicester for Leicester against Everton. I just want to get a quick thought from the boys on tomorrow's crackerjack games to look forward to in the Premier League. Fulham against Arsenal, that one's live at 3 o'clock, the London derby. Then Southampton entertain Chelsea. That one is from 5:15. But the one on everyone's lip is the one that kicks off at 7:30. Liverpool entertain Man City. This has got challenge contenders, title contenders written all over it. Let's hear it from Jurgen Klopp.
I don't think it makes too much sense at the moment to think about the title. There are a lot of games to play, and it's a home game against Manchester City, and that's a tough one. Yeah, they were all tough, even when we won in the Champions League 3-0. That was not a 3-0 how you usually see it. That the other team is without a chance or whatever. They were really good that night as well. And the 4-3, they were really good. And they won before that kind of 60, 70 games in a row. That's how it felt. And then they came here, where after equalizer, they had quite a good, phase in the game. But they never gave up.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.